everyone. Cuckoo. Welcome to Eurofile. My name is Catherine Rory.
My name is Kate Walker.
Hey, hello. Kate, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. Nothing. I went to the Greek store again.
She's addicted.
They have these falafel wraps, and then you put the spicy feta dip with it and tzatziki, and
genius.
It comes with like onion and tomato.
Yum. Huh? Ooh, delicious. It's perfect so afternoon. Good. Perfect lunch.
It's literally a good like weekend trip. $5 too. So it's so good. Yeah, I know. I love that place. I'm like, it's all these like gruff guys, you know?
Yeah.
So, like some are like, some guy is the owner, but you can tell it's just like men who work there because it's like people who eat gyros who go there.
Yeah, I was going to say. And then there's like cutesy little you
type
strutting in. And you want a falafel wrap.
I know. Yeah. Can I get a falafel wrap? Maybe
good,
a frappe,
oh,
please. Thank you.
Yeah. Kate and the boys.
What about you?
And the Greek boys. I'm good. We are recording this a little bit early per usual because we like to be prepared. But I think when this comes out, I might be in New York for a wedding. So I already have a Balthazar reservation taken care of. I'll be going with
absolutely
my girl Christina. She and I love steak frites.
Your steak frites.
If you know me, you know I love a long leisurely lunch, and I have been like, Christina, where are we gonna go? Where is our girly long leisurely lunch gonna be? And we decided on Balthazar. So I'm very excited. I've never been there before. I've never eaten at Balthazar, which is insane.
It's such a New York institution.
I know. Yeah. So I'm excited for that.
So many movies. People love to go. Yeah. I went last time I was in New York. It was excellent. It was great.
I'm excited. And I think we're eating outside. So it's just, and like they set up like very cozy looking little like booths outside. So yeah, it'll be very cute.
Perfect.
I'm so excited for another little
New
York trip.
And like New York will be dressed up for Christmas.
Yeah.
It'll
I can't
be so
wait.
Cute.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
I'm really excited. Got to pull out my winter coats. Don't know where they are. Hopefully they're here and not in Wisconsin. I genuinely don't know. So that's for me to figure out at a later time.
That'll be a nice surprise. Either way.
Well, shall we talk about something fun?
Yes.
We are going to Spain in this episode today. And we are going to talk about Francisco Rabaneda Cuervo, a.k.a. Paco Rabanne, the legend.
Yes.
The man, the myth, the legend. Dear Paco, who passed away earlier this year. R.I.P.
That is
to the great.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
To the 60s king.
Yes. Yep.
King of the 60s.
Our futuristic king. Yep. So he was born, surprise, surprise, February 18th, another beloved Aquarius freak.
Aquarius.
And
that makes so much sense. For like
so much
his, like futurism.
And yes, totally.
Yeah.
And just you wait. He is more eccentric than I ever thought possible. So I was
excellent.
Giggling, positively giggling, reading about things that he has said. So he's
right.
Very fun.
Right.
So as I said, his name was Francisco Rabaneda Cuervo, but he changed his name to Paco Rabanne because he wanted it to be 11 letters long because he thought that 11 was a lucky number. So that's just a little taste of like what's to come. Yeah.
Got it.
The New York Times described him as a futurist, couturier, mystic, madman, dadaist, sculptor, architect, astrologer, perfumer, artist, and prophet. And Salvador Dali simply called him the second genius of Spain. Behind himself, of
the
course.
The second genius. Wow. What a compliment.
Yeah. And what a long list of titles. He has done it all. His early life. He was born in the Basque town of Paisaia. His father was a Republican colonel, and he was executed by General Francisco Franco's nationalist forces in 1936 during the Spanish Civil War. So right in there, part of history. Yeah. Paco's mother was the chief seamstress at Cristobal Balenciaga's first couture house in Basque country. And in 1939, when Paco Rabanne was four, she moved the family to France after Balenciaga opened his couturier in Paris. So okay. he's born in Spain, but grew up, spent majority of his life in France. So in mid-1950s Paris, he is studying architecture at the L'École Nationale des Beaux-Arts. And he starts, okay. you know, how am I going to make some money on the side? He starts making abstract jewelry and novelty buttons of metal, leather, and coffee beans for the houses of Schiaparelli, Dior, Balenciaga, Cardin, and uh-huh. Givenchy. So, like, okay, he is cool. in everywhere.
Just as a side hustle.
Yeah, just a side just hustle. A little side hustle. Easy money. Like, in there, again, like, history making names and people. Like, mm-hmm. it's just so cool. Like, pinch me, what a mm-hmm. time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also doing sketches for them, and he's sketching for famous shoe designer Charles Jourdan as well.
Okay.
However, he doesn't go into fashion just yet because he's studying to be an architect, and he takes a job with France's foremost developer of reinforced concrete, Auguste Perret.
Sexy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, makes sense. And he works there for 10 years. Which okay, gives whoa. Him like a, so like, he's not a sewer, you know? So this makes sense. Like this, like in construction, mm-hmm. like architect background of his, like makes sense right. given his clothes and like the materials right. that he would make clothes out of. So mm-hmm. it's like, it all makes sense actually.
Okay.
So in 1966, he leaves architecture and founded his own fashion house, Paco Rabanne.
The natural next move.
Yeah. He's like, well, I'm done with concrete. I want to have some fun. I'm going to make some crazy shit.
Silk.
Yeah. Yes. And he, of course, started using unconventional material, such as metal, mm-hmm. paper, and plastic mm-hmm. for like his outlandish, flamboyant designs. Mm-hmm. And he debuted his first line in 1966, and it was called Manifesto, 12 Unwearable Dresses in Contemporary Materials. So
what an Aquarius.
Exactly. Like thinking outside the box, things yeah. that no one has ever done before. So he's yeah. like, you know, what we think of as the classic Paco Rabanne look, like plaques, little pieces of metal or rhodoid, which is an organic plastic that were linked together oh. by wire ties.
Right.
So like uh-huh. chainmail almost looking kind of things, but like made with plastic and metal. And his models yeah. were barefoot because he couldn't afford to shoe them. Which I'm like, okay. just hit up Charles Jourdan. Like, he's your buddy. Couldn't he have done something about that? But yeah. anyway,
like, so just like shoes. Yeah.
These like barefooted models walking down the runway in like dresses made of metal and tied together by wire. Like, so cool. So mm-hmm. what a futurist. Like, I love it. Paris hated it. No one in Paris liked
it. Of course.
It.
Yeah.
Of course, Coco Chanel had an opinion. And had she said, say, he's a yeah. metal worker, mm-hmm. not a couturier. And of course,
if,
like, what
if you're on the bad side of Coco Chanel, you know you're doing yeah. something right, I feel like.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. And like,
she is such a snob.
And like, she was redefining fashion too. And here's someone else redefining fashion. She's like, no.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. The feud. We should talk about the feud between her and Schiaparelli one episode.
I would love to. Like, yeah.
She.
What a bitch.
Just snob and a half.
Yeah. And not a good person.
Really?
But anyway. Rabanne said they were shivering in terror in the New York Times. It was difficult for them because they saw clothes that they couldn't understand, which was true. Right.
Yeah.
But like, okay, Paris hated it. New York, especially
on the other hand,
Vogue,
the city
Diana
of
Vreeland.
Metal. Yeah.
Yes. Diana Vreeland and the Herald Tribune's Eugenia Shepherd were loving it. Yeah. Like, they were like, we get this. This is very fun.
Yeah.
He didn't consider himself a futurist, but obviously like this set in stone, like what he was is going to be known for the rest of time.
Right.
Like that
right.
was his contribution to
it's
fashion.
His legacy.
Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Right.
This, like his like futuristic space age designs mm-hmm. and that People magazine journalist Hetty Phillips said, turned the fashion world upside down. Like, yeah. What mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, super popular in America right away. And it was being worn by celebrities the world over, including our girl Peggy Guggenheim, Françoise Hardy, Brigitte Bardot, and Jane Birkin. So these girls, the It girls, are running with it.
Good.
He designed for the 1968 science fiction film Barbarella, starring Jane Fonda. Like, that iconic green dress that she wears. I will be sharing a picture.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Or like I've never seen the picture like of the dress.
It's like
I know the movie.
Yes, but I've never watched the movie.
Yeah,
I did Google it, and I mean, it's very cool. It's like this tiny little emerald green dress that's like skin tight with like geometric like metal. It looks very Paco Rabanne. He was named one of the fashion revolutionaries in New York by Women's Wear Daily, alongside Eddie Sedgwick, Pierre Cardin, André Courrèges, who we briefly touched on in the last episode, Yves Saint Laurent, and Mary Quaint, who we also talked about.
Oh my God, how fun.
He, of course, continues to innovate and create crazy outfits out of different materials, including paper dresses that are held together by Scotch tape, which he showed in 1967. And the Times called him a new kind of awesome chic. And later he would start making clothes out of Velcro, aluminum, and fiberglass. And he said, I wanted to turn women into modern warriors. And I was like, absolutely. I just love that. Yeah. You know, it was another major thing for him? Fragrance.
Oh, yes. So,
Wow.
I knew this guy. Or you go, and then I'll
have some things to say. So in 1968, he began collaborating with the fragrance company Puig, which I had to look up how to pronounce that. I thought it was Puig.
It's Spanish, right?
Yes. Yeah. Like a major, they own so many things. And it resulted in Puig marketing his perfumes. So in 1969, his first and arguably most popular scent, called Calendra, was released. In 1973, he released Paco Rabanne Pour Homme, followed by Metal, La Nuit, Sport, and XS. So okay, that's enough that I have. That's all I have on perfume. So please chime in. What's going on?
Wow. The memories I have of the intoxicating male scent that a couple guys, like from college, they would walk by and they would be wearing Paco Rabanne Pour Homme. Okay. And I understand it is delicious. It is good. Like, I remember there was this one guy, we were always friends with, you know, like international students. And there is this guy who is Nigerian, and he would always walk by, and I'd be like, literally, what are you wearing? We would stop him and like had to like ask.
You smell amazing. Yeah.
And every time we'd see him at a party, you'd just like sniff him. Like,
yeah,
it's just so good. I think Pour Homme has a little bit of a fuckboy connotation now.
Oh,
I mean, I think it's delicious.
Yeah. Well, you know what I thought of first was when, in Sex and the City, of course, when Big is talking to Carrie about Aiden, and he's like, what, does he wear Paco Rabanne?
Yes.
And I was like, what is that,
so
like,
funny.
Weird, no, like, late patchouli. 90s. Oh, patchouli and Paco Rabanne. Yeah.
No, I meant like, you know,
if anything.
He's not even aware of Paco Rabanne. Yeah. He's not on his radar.
He smells like sawdust.
Like, he smells like sawdust and Irish Spring. Like that's it's not bad. It's just
on
not
the road game with the speed stick.
That's so funny. No, to me it was like very like masculine, slick, sexy, like that's what I got from that.
So
like
that's more Big.
Like a head turning whoa.
Yum, I need to smell.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, later in the 80s, he started getting into things other than like women's wear or perfume. Mm-hmm. So in 1981, Paco Rabanne introduced home furnishings, which I'd be very interested to see what those were like. In 1983, he introduced a ready-to-wear line for men. In 1990, he did women's ready-to-wear.
Okay.
And in 1999, he retired. And in 2010, he was awarded the Legion d'Honneur by France's Minister of Culture, citing his contributions to the arts and fashion.
Absolutely.
He was a ledge. Let's talk about his eccentricities. This is hilarious. He would make some really crazy public statements.
Oh, God.
They're all fun, though.
I was like, are we not going to like him anymore?
No, okay. He's utterly harmless, and this will make you love him even more.
Okay.
He claimed to have had several lives. He was a sex worker in the time of Louis the 15th. He also knew Jesus in a previous life. Really? He had seen God 3 times. Mm-hmm. He has been visited by extraterrestrials. He murdered Tutankhamun and is 75,000 years old. Hilarious. I'm like,
what is there to say? Like, I just adore you. Yeah.
You are so silly fun, but like, he's serious about this. Like, he truly believed that.
Real to him. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in 1999, he said that he was like, when I was 17, I had visions of Parisians in flames throwing themselves into the Seine. And after studying other prophecies, he came to the conclusion that the Russian Mir space station was going to crash into France from outer space on the solar eclipse of August 11th, 1999, causing thousands of deaths.
So is that why he retired? Because he wanted to leave?
Maybe. Honestly, probably. And in May of 1999, he publicly vowed to not make any more predictions if this crash doesn't happen. He's like, in a couple months, it's going to happen. If it doesn't, I'm done. Right.
Okay.
And of course, like, that didn't happen.
Right. Yeah.
But he did say that an apparition of the Virgin Mary came to him saying that you need to continue with your predictions. So
Stop.
I think that's publicly so he did stop. But maybe amongst his circles, he kept sharing his predictions.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
He also was a very austere person. Like, he dressed with priestly simplicity, and he had very few possessions. And at one time, he supported a Benedictine-run hospice for AIDS sufferers from the proceeds of his work. So he was like, what a darling man, like, did not need material things.
Had a good heart. Yeah.
Yeah. And he wrote several books about his paranormal beliefs. One was.
What?
Like, nothing about fashion, like, about his predictions and prophecies.
So, like, he really did have many lives.
Yeah. Truly. Yeah. Very multifaceted person. And the first one was called Has the Countdown Begun? Through Darkness to Enlightenment. That came out in 1994. And in 1999, a big year for him, he released The Dawn of the Golden Age, A Spiritual Design for Living. So that sounds interesting.
I'm going to look into that.
Yes,
what is that?
I know.
Is that like a guide?
Yeah.
Is that like...
It's a spiritual a design
book?
For living.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
I want to find out. So he passed away on February 3rd of this year, just 15 days short of his 89th birthday.
Wow.
He passed away in France. I'm going to end it with a little quote of his.
Okay.
He said, I know that I will always have a place in the history of fashion. I'm in all of the dictionaries because I introduced new materials to the world of fashion, to have created the first dresses in metal, paper, and molded plastic. That is my legacy. That's so true.
It is.
So beautiful.
It so is. My reference for Paco Rabanne, obviously we know the aluminum dress, the shimmy 60s aluminum dress, but seeing him do the costumes, or I don't know if he did the costumes, but they used his dresses in this.
Oh, okay.
In this film, it's this French film called Camille 2000, but it's the retelling. It's like a modern 60s retelling of the Lady of Camellias, which is written by Alexandre Dumas. You know, she's a sex worker and, you know, she's like a kept woman. So she has like this house like mansion that's or villa, I should say, that's like filled with like blow up 60s clear furniture.
So cool.
And like, you know, those like, what are they called? They're like a den where it's like you go in, it's like in a, it. It's like a talking
down to like a sunken living room,
to like a sunken like fireplace. Yes, it's like that.
Love that is so great.
And they're all just like shimmying. They're, you know, the makeup is, you know, having the cut crease, the, the black cut crease, like just so, so cute. 60s. And I was like, who, first of all, who did the music? Who did the costumes? Who did the interiors? Because this is might be one of the worst films I've ever seen, subject wise, but it is
the vibes.
Delicious vibes. Delicious. Absolutely impeccable.
I mean, I've you shared pictures and it's amazing. Yeah. We can reshare for
I should look up that. Cause there was like, it was pretty racy. There was like sex in it. And like for the 60s, like I feel like they would allude to or like show things, but not like show like naked people. You know?
Yeah.
Having sex on a blow up. On a blow up. Like
only the French or Italians, you know, would do something like that.
I know. Yeah, it was very fun.
I mean, I would just love a Paco Rabanne dress. Like I have always wanted.
Well,
a,
you can get one now.
Yes,
at H&M.
The recent H&M Paco Rabanne. Actually, they're all sold out. I know. I think
that was bound to happen.
Yeah. Like, oh, of course.
It was too good.
Like, and like, I still don't want to spend $400. And the one that I actually want is going to be a lot more than that. So like, who do I think I am? But I would love one. Or like a little Paco Rabanne bag. Like I love a little like metal bags.
Yeah. Evening bag.
So cute.
Totally.
Love.
Absolutely.
What an icon.
Anything.
R.I.P.
Thank you so much for that fun, fun, futuristic topic.
We love Paco.
We love an Aquarius soul freak. Who
we do.
You know, propels us forward, right? So we're going to talk about something, let's say ancient. It's not ancient, middle, from the Middle Ages.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Feast of Fools. Do you know what this is?
No.
Okay, so it was popular in Europe, but basically it ended up being more of a French thing, like in Paris. But it was a popular festival during the Middle Ages, which was held on or around January 1st. They would elect a mock bishop and pope, and then they would parody like rituals from the church, and high and low officials would exchange places with just normal like laymen around the city.
Yeah.
And they think that these festivals were probably like a Christian adaptation of pagan festivities of Saturnalia.
I was thinking, I was like, this sounds pagan and silly and weird and not weird, you know.
It's silly.
Compared to Catholicism, like it's so rigid.
Where it's very serious, And in Saturnalia, it was a Roman festival. So all work and business were suspended. Slaves were given temporary freedom to say and do whatever they liked. Certain moral restrictions were eased, and the streets were infected with like Mardi Gras, like carnival madness. And they would choose a mock king, and you would greet people on the street saying "Io Saturnalia," and so that was, you know, the greeting that you would use walking around
Sounds
Rome.
So fun.
The festival seemed to have acted as sort of like this like brief and needed like social revolution, to where it was sort of like controlled revolution, and it gave and it feigned like this change, like social change, which it didn't.
Like, and let people let loose, have a little fun, and then get back to the normal life.
But it really, but really it's fake. Like, you know, this is the way society was sort of like, it's like controlled chaos, controlled rebellion a little bit. So not dissimilar to, you know, Mardi Gras or Carnival. People would dance provocatively, wear masks. Things would be a little like obscene. They would have a thing called Galette du Roi, which is, you know, similar in Mardi Gras. They have king cake. Obviously in France, Galette du Roi is still a thing. Eventually, you know, the Catholic Church, what does it do? Ruin fun.
Yeah, ruins everything. Anti-fun brigade.
And so the Council of Basel in 1431 basically just decreed that this was
no more.
Had to be suspended. Yeah.
Lame.
I know. And then local officials would, you know, put bans where they could on, like, you know, wherever in France or Italy or Spain this was happening. And then obviously I'm familiar with this Feast of Fools because of Victor Hugo and his novel Hunchback of Notre Dame. So in the novel, it's celebrated on January 6th, which is a holiday within Christianity. It's like, I think the wise men that day. And then Quasimodo serves as the Pope of Fools. And then in Disney's 1996, you know, the animated version of this, it shows Quasimodo getting elected as King of Fools. And, you know, the topsy-turvy song plays. I don't know if you remember that.
That one was a little scary for me. I don't know why. I found the evil man very scary.
It was.
And I didn't like it.
Throwing a baby down a well. Like,
yes.
He was gonna throw a baby down a well.
Yes. That was scary. Too much for me to bear. Little
very
me.
Scary.
Esmeralda, though, like, was that bitch. And I did like
bitch.
Her.
She was that bitch. And that was the first, like, introduction to Romani people for me.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You know, yeah. I never really thought about it. I mean, we weren't, you know, it wasn't like.
That's so true.
Like, introduced a lot to Americans, I feel like, until. I mean, obviously, I was very young when I saw that movie. So it's not shocking that that was, you know, our first introduction. But it's interesting. It's in a Disney movie.
Yeah.
That is the story of the Feast of Fools.
That sounds like a gay old time.
It wasn't until it wasn't.
Yeah, I know. Ugh, everything fun gets ruined.
I know. But I guess there's Mardi Gras, which is pretty fucking great. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fun. Yeah. Do you have a recommendation for me?
I do. It's not something specific, but it is a place, I guess. Or if you are not even a Christian, just someone who likes advent calendars, go to World Market. World Market has so many advent calendars. Like, they have the Bon Maman, you know, jam. They have the Walkers, like, shortbread cookies one. They have the one I really wanted was the Tony's Chocolonely, like that Dutch brand of chocolate. That's so delicious. Just like
that is so
Harry
cute.
Potter things, like they had like other things that weren't European, but obviously you know, Europhile, I have to recommend the Euro things, but they're kind of expensive because obviously they're importing it, but it is fun.
I mean, I would love the Bon Maman
Milka. Just like fun fun things like that.
I love that. I love an advent calendar, like that's always they're always so fun. Who
Me
doesn't
too.
Like a little treat every morning if you can pace yourself and not open up the whole thing, because
I have also done that. I have been known to do that.
Yeah.
And it's always like with shitty advent calendar that's like waxy milk,
crappy chocolate.
And I was like, I refuse to have a shitty advent calendar this year.
My mom got me one year a L'Occitane one, and that one was super fun. Like lotion, soaps, shampoos, body wash. Like, that was super fun. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I am recommending someone on TikTok today. I'm recommending Emily Wood Makeup. She is a British makeup artist who blows my mind because there she is. She's just like out in the middle of nowhere putting on lip liner and she doesn't need a mirror. She doesn't look at her phone. She's just like, boop, 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 does it. But she's so calming, this lovely British accent, and everything she does is like very editorial and fun and colorful.
Okay.
Like crazy colors, but she doesn't look insane. Like, it looks a little out there, but
editorial,
it's like fun
or something. Yeah.
And it's just like a swipe of hot pink on her eyes with like yellow in the corners and then like a boldly lined purple lip, and I'm like, you look so fun. It's so inspiring. It makes me want to be like a makeup girl and like play around. It's very fun.
I know.
Emily Wood Makeup.
I need to learn how to do the 60s liner.
Yes, I know.
I've been saying that, and yet I do nothing about it. So.
It's so scary. It's so intimidating.
It is scary. Yeah.
And these eyelids, I don't know how long I'll be able to get away with it.
I know. I only have two good years left in my eyelids before I can never do it again as well. But yeah, should I end with the word of the day?
Oh, please.
Okay, so I picked a French word. It's machin. Machin.
Machin.
So it's a synonym for truc, which means like thing or trick.
Oh.
But the English equivalent is like a, what do you call it? Whatchamacallit.
Oh, cute.
So if you like, you can use it if you forget a word or just like cannot be bothered saying it, like mm-hmm. a machin.
Michelle. I love that. Oh, mm-hmm. so cute. Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle. How does that spell? What is that?
M-A-C-H-I-N.
Michelle.
Michelle.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Okay. Well, I hope you all treat yourselves to like a cozy mug of hot chocolate.
Absolutely.
Get in the spirit.
About that time.
You know, the holidays, whatever you celebrate, mm-hmm. get cozy and stay warm, and we'll watch all the fun rom-coms. I feel like Bridget Jones might have to be soon.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Frazzled English Woman Christmas is a new fave theme for me.
Me too.
So until next time.
Ciao.